Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, I'm Fenway home. That's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I'm fake to smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts rocking.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball as well as MLB-wide hot stove. For those of you staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast, as always, can be found on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, Player FM, and wherever you can find it on Google. For those of you who do listen on iTunes, if you want to do us a huge favor, help us out immensely, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and that will drastically improve our visibility within the iTunes app, and we would appreciate that very much. I am Terry Cushman and am joined, as always, by Jeremy Schilling and old pal Chris Saunders making another appearance tonight. How are you, gentlemen?
Not too bad.
I'm okay.
All right. I'm still tinkering with the, the settings. We're off to a late start, so we will get right into it. One of the hot rumors of this week was a rumored discussion between the New York Yankees and the Miami Marlins in regards to a possible Gary Sanchez for JD Realmuto trade. Chris, what are your thoughts since that's right in your wheelhouse?
Honestly, I think the Yankees should be exploring it and even trying to dangle Sanchez as much as they can, because, you know, you look at a lot of the people in that front office that are a part of that Marlins organization besides the likes of Jeter and even some of the front office people that have come through Cashman's kind of pipeline per se are now with the Marlins. And for Sanchez, it makes perfect sense. You know, Dominican players are typically, you know, of a flamboyancy kind of way in that area. And the Yankees need a defensive catcher, and Realmuto, albeit does not have the power of Sanchez, he calls a better game. His focus in terms of game to game, pitch by pitch, is immensely better than what Sanchez is right now. And for the Yankees, you know, I think we might mention the Paxton deal later on in this podcast, but they are a win-now team, and Real Muto is a win-now player. Sanchez, he's a question mark.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to argue the upside, you know, for both players. Like, either one could make a drastic impact on, you know, on a baseball team that's contending for a championship. And I think Sanchez's ceiling's a little higher, but I don't really know how much sense it makes for the Marlins, because he's got 4 years of control left, and I just don't see them competing within that window. So if they plan on extending him and then having him be a centerpiece of which their team might be built around, then it kind of makes a little sense. But I don't know. If I'm a Yankee fan, I'm a little uncomfortable with only a 2-year window, despite the win now mode with Real Muto.
But even with the 2-year window, I mean, there's always a chance that the Yankees could extend him, because, I mean, realistically, the Yankees, I wouldn't go farther than giving up a Sanchez and a lower level prospect. I mean, Real Muto, he's a very good player. He's a top five catcher. He's not a Buster Posey. He's not of that ilk by any means. So there's really no reason to trade your surplus of prospects that you still have even after the Paxton deal, and just give what the Marlins need. If the asking price is too much, I walk away from it. But if it's Sanchez and a lower level prospect, I see nothing wrong with it, because then you could extend him. And then on top of that, Real Muto will not command what Sanchez could on the market 4 years down the road. So you might be saving some money and having a guy who can, you know, to a certain degree, has shown that he can come up in the bright spots, albeit small sample size, because the Marlins are a mediocre team, if not a Triple A team right now.
Jeremy, your thoughts?
You know, I've come out pretty strong against the Devil Rays and their effect negatively on baseball. The Marlins are just such a just a trash bucket. And I expect them to do nothing more than sell Real Muto high here, which, you know, on some level I get. But he's a legitimate major league player, like an all-star type player, a well-rounded player, the type of player you want on your team when you're trying to bring along younger pitching. It's a galvanizing, you know, if you have one position where it's like a leader type role, it's always catcher, because as we saw with Veritek back in the day, at least as Red Sox fans, they can really bring things together just in the clubhouse with the pitching rotation, with the bullpen. They have the largest effect on the roster. That's why you see guys like Ross with the Sox and then with the Cubs have such an effect on the roster, even though that guy only caught like one game a week. If the Marlins do this, I hate them more, unless they get an absolute haul plus Sanchez. It's just not even close to me. Like, it's not the same player. And Sanchez is going so – to me, Sanchez's whole thing is based on, like, a reputation that doesn't exist. Like, does he have the ability? Yeah. Does he have the upside? Yeah. But, I mean, you know, how many people had upside? I mean, let me just throw some stats. 4.3 war at the catcher position for Real Muto. It's outrageous because, again, the Marlins suck. Sanchez 1.2. And I understand he had a down year. He hit 186 with a 697 OPS. Terrible. Absolutely terrible year. Real Muto, 277 batting average, 825 OPS, hit 21 bombs with 74 RBIs on a team that, again, had almost nothing else to offer. He really had a great year. And then when you consider that's on the Marlins, to me, it's worth even more. Sanchez has had some issues. He had the phantom hamstring injury or whatever the hell it was, where he didn't really attempt to beat a ball down the line that had an effect on the last out in the game. He's had some effort issues. He has a great throwing arm, but he's not a great receiver of the baseball. He's not really good defensively. I understand there's the contract issues because there's team control through 2022. And then Real Muto really has 2 years left. I'm sorry, but if I'm the Yankees and they want Sanchez for Realmuto straight up, you know, I'd be on my way down in my, you know, in my. I'm getting some feedback from somebody, but you know, I if I'm a Yankees fan, I do it right away. My problem here is the Marlins are just, it's a goddamn fire sale. It's a free puppy sign on the front yard with a box full of free puppies. And if they do this, it just pisses me off. I expect the Yankees, if it's a straight up sort of deal, to absolutely do it. I think they will do it if it takes another prospect. And I think that makes them instantly better. According to WAR, it makes them 3.1 games better right off the bat, player for player.
Couple of things here. I'm not a big WRC plus guy. You know, I don't really get into that. But in 2016 and 2017 combined, Sanchez was plus 143, and plus 100 is about average. So that's just astronomical, and that's kind of where his ceiling could be. Another thing I was reading earlier, and I just double-checked on it, RJ Anderson, I'm not familiar with him, but he writes for CBS Sports, and he speculates that Sanchez for Realmuto straight up won't be good enough for the Marlins, and that there will need to be prospects also coming back with Sanchez. Does that, Chris, would you say that would kind of take the Yankees out of that?
I mean, it depends on who they're asking for. I know that with the loss of Swanson and Sheffield to the Mariners, as long as, you know, as well as Thompson, I would think the Marlins right now are in desperate need. They will be getting a catcher, so it's a swap back. I would think because of their, you know, they have a lot of position guys, you know, particularly in their outfield with the likes of Magnier Sierra. You also have Monte Harrison, Lewis Brinson. I mean, you can go down the line. So outfield is typically not much of a need for them, but they need arms because they lack those premier guys, because their top guys, and two of them, Kolek, and there was one other prospect that they drafted a couple of years ago. They both had Tommy John surgery. So I would think that they would ask for guys like maybe Michael King, you know, and just you can go down the line, but we don't have that premier arm like we did with Sheffield. So like I said before, if it's Sanchez and a prospect, I'm okay with that. But if it's Sanchez plus three of our top 10 guys, you know what? Honestly, I'd rather keep Sanchez and just hope that maybe he can mature, because to give up that much for a guy, albeit the value could be great, I mean, you don't know what giving up that much talent could do, particularly if you don't want to make the deal. Because Cashman, I've noticed with his deals in the last couple of years, he hasn't traded guys that he particularly drafted. It was more so, you know, guys that he acquired. So is Cashman willing to trade a guy that he signed, developed, called up, and then has seen in the last 3 years since the end of 2016 up until now? That's a question that I think we'll find out probably within the next couple months.
Yeah, it's interesting because Sheffield did come over in the Andrew Miller deal, as did Clint Frazier.
Okay. Yep, and Dylan Tate too.
Yeah. So,
Chris, I think your reasoning here is right on, and I hate complimenting people.
he does.
I really like love to find ways to disagree with people, especially in a podcast setting, to keep the kind of the back and forth going. Here, I think you're dead on. Why would the Yankees feel the need to go three deep on the prospect pool? I mean, obviously Sanchez is involved. That's what we're talking about. So it's Realmuto and Sanchez plus what else, right? That's the question. Yep. Yep. And if it's three top 10 guys, like you suggested, get the fuck out of here. Like, the Yankees are, you know, I mean, they're idiots, but they're not stupid. So I would think that it would be one high-level prospect, and then if it's going to be something more than another player, it's going to be some lower-level throw-in. That just makes all the sense in the world, because Realmuto is the better player. Now, who knows what the Marlins do, right? Because the Marlins are just the worst franchise in all sports. So you don't know what they do. I mean, you could get Realmuto and a prospect for Sanchez. I mean, they're just fucking idiots over there. So I agree with you right on. I think your reasoning is right on, and for that reason, I think I'll just drop it right there. Terry?
I'll just add, I still lean towards Sanchez. I mean, I wouldn't complain, I guess, if JT Realmuto came over. I mean, he's a 5 or 6 hole hitter, which is about where Sanchez hits, and more than adequate offensively and defensively. Okay. But I like the ceiling of Sanchez, and he's had 1 bad year out of 3. So another.
Okay,
go ahead.
Here's where I really – can I disagree with you, Terry? I ask permission, like you're going to be like yes or no. The Yankees are not built for what your ceiling is. They just lost the AL East, which you know bothers them. They lost to the Red Sox in the playoffs, which bothers them. And then the Red Sox won the World Series, which puts a massive hair across their ass. So they don't give – like – I'm going to put on my Yankees hat here right now. They don't give a shit about what your ceiling is. They're not talking about 4 years from now. Like, they need to get farther than the Red Sox. They need to get in the World Series this year. And to me, their moves need to dictate that. And so far, they've been smart because they haven't necessarily burned any assets. They're letting the market come to them, at least so far. They need pitching help big time, and by the way, I think Realmuto is a factor there because he's just a better baseball mind from what I know about him. Why are you going to keep Sanchez with Realmuto there when you have a surplus of assets? Like, he makes you better right away, and they need to be better right away, and they need to be better in the spot that we're talking about.
He makes them better if you're basing it entirely on 2018. If you base it on 2016, 2017, Sanchez is by far better and still does have better numbers despite 2018 being bad. He does have better overall career numbers. So that's who I'm sticking with.
Realmuto is an 825 OPS. Sanchez's career is a 847. And I get it, Terry. I do. I just, to me, Realmuto is the sturdier player. The more, you know, not like a stock market ticker where it's up and down, like a straight vertical line. And to me, he offers a more complete player at probably the most important position.
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at Sanchez, I mean, if I could just say something real quick, yeah. When you look at what Sanchez is right now, he is by far, and I can honestly say this in my, you know, from what I could remember watching baseball when I was 4 years old, from that point until I'm 25 now, both him and Greg Bird are probably the two most head-scratching, intriguing, disappointing. I mean, there's so many words I can use to, you know, utilize what they could potentially mean to a team like the Yankees, because Greg Bird has all the talent. He's got the pretty swing. He can play first base, but he's never healthy. Sanchez is the same way, except it's not injury as much as being focused on the baseball field and having the overall focus both on the field and also off the field, because there's been questions with him, as you both have stated. So when you look at it, it's almost like, how long before they let go and say, you know what, we can't deal with this anymore because it's not what we can afford, because we're trying to win a World Series, because as we saw with the Red Sox, and you could just, I mean, you could go down the line of the teams that have won, the Red Sox, the Royals, you look at the Cubs, Astros, they all had defensive catchers who did not squirt the ball out. And look, I mean, prime example, the game against Houston, what killed them in that conference championship? It was Maldonado not being able to block balls, and both Verlander, McCullers, Cole, they weren't comfortable throwing the breaking stuff. They threw fastballs, and you guys feasted the entire series.
True. Yeah, I don't know. I like the extra 2 years. And Chris, your earlier point where, you know, they could extend Realmuto and kind of have a catcher long-term that's a little bit cheaper, you know, there is some attractiveness to that, but I don't know. I guess I'm just hung up on 2016 and 2017. Also, the Braves had a little bit of dialogue with the Marlins you know, with Real Muto, but they were unwilling to include Ozzy Albies in the deal. So those talks.
I would include him.
You would?
I would not.
Okay.
I wouldn't include him, Acuna. I would not do any of that. I'm sorry, but Realmuto's great. I know that he could help that team, but the Braves are at least another year away from being able to compete for a World Series. But honestly, I think getting McCann on that team is, you know, immensely better than almost anything else they could have gotten without giving up prospects, because that guy, I mean, look what he did with Houston before they were in the World Series. You know, he was able to help that team, and he, I mean, if you can compare what they have between shortstop, second, center field, I mean, I'm not saying that they're Houston, but they're pretty freaking close, and they're kind of built the same way of a young core.
Right. We kind of talked about the McCann acquisition briefly, and I kind of compared him to David Ross at this point in his career. I think that's the role he will have.
And I like that.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he'll be a leader, you know, for the young guys, especially if Markakis doesn't come back. And
he's not coming back.
Yeah, so, right. So let's shift over to James Paxton and kind of get your thoughts on that.
I like the deal. I think Paxton will help the team. He doesn't have to be the ace. He doesn't have to be the number two. He's going to be the number four guy, I would think, and, you know, if I'm thinking my head correctly, if we go out and get at least one more starting pitcher, no matter if it's Corbin or whomever, minus Keuchel, I don't want Keuchel, you would figure if we can get Corbin, it would be Severino, Tanaka, Corbin, or switch Tanaka and Corbin, however you want to call it. Then you have Paxton, CeCe, and then the likes of 6, 7, 8 could be Loaiza Siga, Herman, Chance Adams. You can go down the line, Michael King. But this Yankee team right now sees how the defense, mainly in the infield, the outfield is pretty good when you look at Gardner, Hicks, and Judge. I'm not saying it's the Red Sox outfield, but it's a good outfield. But the infield, we have questions at the corners because we don't know who our first baseman is. Andujar is still a work in progress. We don't have a shortstop at least until July, if not later, because of DD having Tommy John. And then Torres is an adequate second baseman. And then catcher, I mean, we just talked about Sanchez and his defense. So what are the Yankees trying to do? Well, you got Paxton, who had over 11 strikeouts per nine. You have a bullpen, which led, I think, had four of the top six guys with Chapman, Green, Britton when he was acquired. And then you have the likes of Severino, who can get strikeouts as well. What the Yankees are trying to do is get strikeouts, ground balls, not pop-ups. And that's what Paxton does. And I'm fine with what they gave up, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, Paxton has his injury issues, and his ERA is a run higher on the road compared to pitcher-friendly Safeco Park. And I like Tanaka a lot, especially in big games, but, you know, who knows with his health, and you know, CeCe, you're hoping for the best.
I mean, the health in what way? I mean, if you're questioning the UCL
with Tanaka?
With Tanaka, yes.
Well, that's one of them. And then didn't he have a an issue with both of his quads last year?
He had problems with his hamstrings, but I'm not as concerned with that because every player, you know, has a hamstring problem here or there. The UCL, I mean, I think of that argument as a, you know, almost like Tom Brady, where every year, oh, Brady's going to be bad because he's 38, he's 39, he's 40, he's 41. After a while, eventually you're going to be right because Father Time is always the winner. But, you know, right now, Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the league. The reason why I mentioned that is because people have said now since the UCL, oh, he's going to blow out this year. And then, no, it's going to be next year. Then it's going to be the year after that. Maybe Tanaka has found a way, which right now he has, where he has not torn the UCL. And whatever he's doing, I think it's like a masterpiece in a way because he's avoided the injury for so long, and he's remade himself from a guy who throws 94 to 95 to now who's 90-91, but relies more on that slider. And he stayed healthy.
He scuffles a lot in the middle of the season, especially, and then he kind of does seem to figure it out, you know, as you get closer to the playoffs. And I don't know. I just, with these Japanese guys, they tend to have a lot of miles on their arms before they get here. And I don't know. I just, he might be fine, but I don't think you exactly have that 1-2 knockout punch. Maybe with Severino, if he gets consistent and Boone isn't leaving him in there for 8 innings in April, May, and June, you know, maybe he kind of, you know, is an ace for the full season. And then after that, I mean, you got a lot of very serviceable guys that could have a good season, but I don't know. I don't think Corbin's necessarily the answer either. You know, he's unproven in a big market, and last year was his first real good year. He was all right in 2013, I guess, but I don't know. It's not an elite starting pitcher's market this off season. Anyway, but. Jeremy, you've been
Well, I wanted to give Chris as much leash as possible because this is his team and he knows it better than I do. But Chris and I have kind of an ongoing debate about Keuchel. When you're a big market team, I always feel like it's best to go get the player of need with dollar bills and not assets. So let's say, for example, you need a shortstop and you can go get one for 4 years and $60 million. You'd rather do that than get a guy, potentially also have to pay him, whether it be that year or a following year or whatever, and assets, you know, players from your farm system. Now, the Yankees still don't have a fifth starter, so they still may do this. But my point and my input here would be, the surprise that they went and spent assets when there are guys that are at least comparable that you could have gotten with just dollar bills. And being the Yankees and they have all the dollar bills in the world, I was surprised to see that they spent the assets they did with the farm system over trying to go jump into the market quickly with a starter. That's it. I don't necessarily think it's a bad move. Paxton, as a Red Sox fan, because again, everything my analysis begins and ends on how does this affect the Boston Red Sox? And to me, I'm like just not overly concerned about it. They still don't have a fifth guy. Paxton to me doesn't seem to be an elite guy. I understand that he has, like Chris mentioned, he has his strikeouts per nine innings are like 11 something. It's a good stat. He's been pitching in Safeco in Seattle, which, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they had the air conditioning pointed in from the outfield stands. That it's just a great place to pitch, and Yankee Stadium is not. So, that's kind of speculating. Like, well, how's it going to translate to Yankee Stadium? He could be just as good. He could be better. He could be worse. I don't know. But Paxton does not fear me as a Boston Red Sox fan. So.
And you make a great point, though, about how, you know, we don't know how Paxton's going to be when he gets into Yankee Stadium because Sonny Gray, amongst others, Carl Pavano, Jarrett Wright, Randy Johnson, I can go down the line of guys, Keigawa, who did not pan out in New York. Some guys do, some guys don't. And, you know, you really don't know until you get them there. So that's kind of the argument of, we don't know if this guy's going to pan out. Well, we don't know unless we get him there. But I get why I get why the Yankees traded away some of the prospects they did. Thompson is, you know, he profiles as a fourth outfielder, maybe a guy who can come off the bench with some power, like a Chris Carter. Swanson's a number four starter at best, but the Yankees weren't going to keep him on the 40-man, so he was expendable. And Sheffield, and I said this to Terry and others during the season, I was told at a young age, watch how a major league team, not so much the big moves, but watch the small moves. Watch what they do with signings here and there, no matter if it's just for a small player. Sometimes it speaks volumes about what they have in their system or even more. And what I saw from Sheffield even during the time as he was going through the system up until he was called up, there were guys picked ahead of him, Loaisiga. I mean, Chance Adams got a spot start over him at Fenway, albeit the Yankees still got swept. But that spoke volumes to me that they did not want to pitch him. He was their number one prospect, even at that point. So they were worried about his control. They felt like he really could not maybe handle the moment right now and probably for not the next couple of years command-wise. So they felt like, okay, our window is maybe 3, possibly 4 years. Sheffield might not be ready until the 4th, if not 5th year, depending on you know, how his talent, you know, dictates. And he could very well be a reliever at the end of the day. So let's trade him while his value is high, and let's get a guy for 2 years, get him on our team, and see if maybe he can get acclimated with the Yankees. But
I get that 100%, Chris. And, like, your knowledge of the minor leagues, you know, far exceeds mine, if we're being completely honest. And I get it, and you know, you're – so, like, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, or I don't have reason to disagree with it. Mm-hmm. My point is just simply this. Eovaldi's on the market. Keuchel, Corbin, mm-hmm. other smaller players, yep. other guys that maybe only have 1 year left on a mid or small market team mm-hmm. where you can spend less and get – you know, and spend more dollars, and you're the Yankees. So why can't you go get Eovaldi and Corbin and not trade the assets for Paxton? Now, obviously, look, Cashman's smarter baseball guy than me. It just, that's my mindset, and that's why I was kind of curious about the deal as early as it was in the offseason, because, like, Paxton, I didn't hear anything else about Paxton. I didn't hear the Red Sox were in on him.
Nope.
And you may about to, you know, Terry loves correcting me with stats, like, right after I say my point and just completely deflate my balloon. But I didn't know Paxton was, like, the only thing I heard was, like, the Yankees were immediately in on Paxton. And my thought remains today, which is, like, because the market hasn't moved yet. No one major has really signed. Yep. So it's like, well, Why didn't they wait to see if they could get Eovaldi for 3 and 6 and, like, 45-50 and then go get a – and I know you don't like Keuchel, so I won't use him. But what about, like, Corbin on a Porcello deal, which is, I think, yep. 4 and 82. And then you still have those guys in the system. But all you spent was dollar bills when you're the Yankees. You have more revenue than like, 70 countries. Like, it's just – I'm just surprised by the deal. And – you know, that's my point. And you know, you're going to talk about minor leaguers and things that, I'm not on the same level.
Let me point out, you mentioned earlier, you know, you talked about Sonny Gray, you know, when you mentioned Paxton. I would more worried that Corbin would end up in the Sonny Gray dilemma than Paxton. I just think Paxton's going to scuffle a little bit, you know, more so than what a lot of Yankee fans might expect.
I mean, again, it's hard to speculate on, I mean, who's going to do well in, you know, New York and who isn't. It's a guessing game because, I mean, some guys translate who you think don't do well and they do. Others you think are going to be great and they're terrible. So it's one of those things where you can look at what their home and road splits are, you know, how are they on this day's rest, that day's rest, and so on. But at the end of the day, it's all about what happens once they put on the uniform and get that first pitch out there. And, you know, I think the first month will be assigned for Paxton to see if he can just get his feet under him and kind of just get used to being in New York. So I'm not too concerned if he gets out and has like a 9 ERA the first month. I'm not concerned with that. But if it's as bad as where Sonny Gray was, then you start having concerns. But until then, you know, I think, you know, if they can have him as their 4th or 5th starter, at least to begin the season, then I think it takes some pressure off him where he doesn't need to perform. And if the Yankees can get off to a hot start like the Red Sox did, or even what the Yankees did from, I think it was the end of April into almost the beginning of June, where they were one of the hottest teams in baseball, I think that will take away some of the struggles that, I mean, all pitchers have during the season.
I just on a really small level, I really disagree with, like, you'd be okay with him starting with a 9 ERA. Like, we're not, you know, Boston is not New York, but we're pretty fucking close. And you need to get off to a good start because the media, the fan base, Twitter, whatever, they will eat you alive and spit you out. And, like, you can have pockets of struggle later, but you need to set the mindset of the media and the rabid fan base early that it's not too big for you. And I know we're kind of – this is more like a philosophical, like, discussion about playing in big markets, but – you have to go out and throw quality starts your first month. You have to. Because, by the way, if you are the type of person that's more neutral and then all of a sudden you start hearing it and you just didn't hear it in Seattle or wherever else you played, like that can just squeeze you and become like a thing in your mindset. And at some point you may, if you don't have an elite start or period of time, that initial first date, so to speak, the fan base will just never forget it, and you'll get eaten up. So, especially with Paxton, where like there was significant assets spent to get him, not by way of a big contract, but like the rabid fan base knows what was spent to get Paxton, and if he comes out and has a 9 ERA after a month. Oh my God, I'm salivating over here. I love it. I hope. I mean, that's my hope. But I think you really got to set, the mindset right away that it's not too big for you.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we can speculate all day long, but I think a lot of us in the AL East, open up on the West Coast as well. So. He won't be getting to New York until probably, I'm guessing, April 10th or so. Moving over to one last Yankee topic, or I should say New York topic, rather. Robinson Cano over to the New York Mets from the Seattle Mariners. Jay Bruce, Nick Swarzak was in the deal. Those are the major leaguers. And they account for roughly $37 million, and then an extra $20 million is being sent over with Cano to make him only a $65 million player for the New York Mets. And what are your thoughts on that, Chris, as well as the prospects that you clearly know better than us?
Well, first off, I appreciate the comment. I really do admire, you guys liking how much I have no life, and I just read about prospects all day. But to go back to your comment, first I'll talk about the Mets. I think for what they did, they're one of the few teams that can eat money, like the Yankees, the Phillies, and maybe some other teams, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. They used the assets that they had with the money and the prospects that they had left in their system and got what they needed, which was a power bat within the middle of that lineup, because Cespedes is just, beyond the fact he might not even play next year, if not for most of the year, they were missing power. So Cano, albeit, is losing that mobility and range at second base or as a defender itself, he still can hit the you-know-what out of the ball. So if you could put him at first base, second base from time to time, that can help that lineup. Diaz, this is, I think, the second time the Mets have acquired a closer who, in the previous season, led the league in saves. If you remember right, they got K-Rod in that time. That following year, they went 70-92. So let's hope the Mets can have a better season than that year. But I think it's a good move for the Mets. I was a little surprised that they maybe didn't wait and try to go out and get maybe a closer like a Kimbrel. I'm just naming closers like a Kimbrel, a Britton, a Miller. But the Mets wanted to pounce, and Brody knows Cano, and he felt like it could help him. Now, in terms of what the Mariners got, I don't care about Swarzak and Bruce. Those are just throw-ins. The two that I care about are Justin Dunn and Kelenic. Dunn is a kid that went to the Gunnery in Connecticut, not too far from where I live, and he went to college at BC. He struggled his first couple years, but he had a dominant year the year he got drafted, and this is a kid with a power fastball. The breaking ball is legit, still searching for a third pitch. And if he can get that third pitch, he's a mid-rotation starter. If he doesn't get it, then he's a power reliever, more so in a setup man to potential closer type because he has the makeup. But Kelenic, And I'm going to use a quote that a scout told me about, because I asked him about Kelenic, because he told me that we were talking back and forth about, okay, who do you like in the deal? And he said, I saw Kelenic. And he said, kid has a chance to be an impact player with a power bat. I've known Jared Kelenic for over a couple years. The kid will kill himself before he ever settles to be mediocre. He's going to be a dude. He has the incredible work ethic. So the Mariners needed prospects. They needed guys within their system to be able to put them forward and maybe hopefully get to the postseason for the first time since whenever it was in the late 2000s or early 2000s. So maybe this kid can lead that. But we'll find out hopefully within the next couple of years.
Jeremy?
Yeah. Again, because Chris is just a little bit deeper into the prospect pool, I would love to be able to banter with you and have that level of knowledge. I don't. And frankly, it bothers me a little bit. my big takeaway, because Terry and I have kind of hit on this already, but just to say something new, I'm just shocked that Seattle got a player in this situation. I understand they had to throw in the elite closer to do it and the prospects you're talking about. I'm still shocked. By the way, when you say it's the Mets, now I'm not so shocked. they're a dumpster fire. I feel bad for Mets fans. I really do. Like, I feel bad for Mets fans. Because I don't have like second favorite teams. I'm so invested in Boston sports that I don't have time to worry about what other cities are doing, other than to root for certain teams. I honestly sympathize with Mets fans. Like, I feel bad. I see them in the grocery store down here in South Florida, and I'll be wearing my Red Sox hat, and I'll just look at them and say, like, I'm sorry, and they'll look at me and go, I understand. It's like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's honestly unbelievable. And the fact that they took this, like, Cano isn't a great offensive player, and I hope for the Mets fans' standpoint that Cano can get back on the juice and then just do it at a level where he doesn't get caught. He's 36 years old. Like, what can you really expect? Maybe one or two more good years, and then he's just old. And he has elite bat speed and hands, and his swing is so effortless. It's like a golfer who can just kind of has a loose swing that can pound a ball 300 yards with a driver. Like, he's that type of guy. But he's still 36. And, Chris, you already used the line, father time is undefeated. And I think you used Brady, which isn't the best example when you're trying to describe how father time is undefeated. But it is. And Cano, you know, he's getting old. And one of the things with Seattle is they came out pretty strong against the steroid things and really said some things that seemingly distanced themselves from Cano, despite the fact that he was still on the roster for 5 years and $120 million. So I'm not surprised they did everything they could to chop him. I'm just really surprised this is all it took to get out from underneath that contract.
Well, I think it was time, though. Like, it was just, they had literally the number 30th ranked farm system in Major League Baseball, and you know, they weren't, the A's were already, you know, they're already basically, you know, going to be a playoff team, you know, caliber team for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And the Astros are going to be good. And now is a perfect time to rebuild. And last year, they also had D. Gordon, who was playing very well at second base. And I think that kind of helped them distance them from Cano. And, you know, and then I just think once the offseason rolled around, Jerry DePoto kind of knew that, you know, he wanted to rebuild. One question before we move on, Chris. Do you like Manny Machado at $300 million, or do you take Cano at $65 million? Oh, I think I lost.
What was that,
Terry? Terry, you're breaking up.
Yeah, Terry, you're like
really bad.
Okay,
and I didn't hear your hypothetical.
My bad. It all went into the recording program. Fine. Let me switch to 4G.
I think he broke up again.
I think I'm back, but this is a new phone, so I'm not.
That's right, just getting out the kinks.
That's
Terry, you sound much better. Throw the hypothetical out. Me and Chris will discuss it while you figure your thing out there.
Yeah, definitely.
No, because it's already. One second.
Hopefully this part's not on the podcast, because this is not good radio.
No, it's not, but... Alright, let's, still can't get it. Stop the Periscope anyway. For anyone listening, I do apologize. I got a new phone today, and that's what's, causing the problems.
You get an iPhone?
He went Samsung.
Oh, yeah. Samsung. No. Yeah,
I can't. Go iPhone, buddy.
Okay. Nope. Thought I had it. If I have my hand on it, it's fine, and then when I take it off, it's not. Well, what my question was would you take Cano at $65 million or Manny Machado at $300
million? Can there be a third option?
Nope.
Yeah, is there a third?
Nope.
Neither. No, I gotta take one?
Yeah,
I go Machado just because I think Cano. It's still 65, but it's still 5 years. Like it doesn't take away the term. Machado's in the prime of his career, and if you're in a win now situation, I think you got to take Machado. He's an elite player. He's probably a top five or eight offensive player or overall player, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So for me, it'd be Machado. Now, with that said, I think Machado's an absolute scumbag. And I think he has zero marketability to people that are paying attention because he's just a dirty player. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Cano has already proven to have tested positive for steroids, and a lot of people consider that cheating. I don't. But I also think, like, to the extent that he's 36 years old, he's going to have to find a way to you know, train this league. So, it's for me, it'd be neither, but I guess if I had to pick a side, it'd be Machado.
Yeah, I'm just being fair with it, I guess. This has been a nightmare. I've never not been able to resolve it. I've never not been able to resolve a technical like this. I don't know if it's better now or not.
Sound fine.
Yeah, but there's a... You don't hear the feedback, though? The buzzing?
Nope. I don't.
No. No feedback.
Oh, well, it's just me then. Sometimes if you position the device just right, it ends up working, but...
Terry, can you cut this out, or is the listener going to have to go through listening to this?
Unfortunately, the latter. Hang on, I'm going back to Wi-Fi.
So why don't we just call it and end the and end tonight's podcast?
You there?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it went away. Yeah, it happened right after I switched over to 4G. All right. I'm just gonna keep going with it. We're going to switch over to Corey Kluber now. He's been connected to the... Let's see, he's been connected to the Mets and the Dodgers. I don't really feel like the Mets are going to be realistic because I don't think they really have the pieces. I thought he only had maybe a year or two left. However, he signed through 2019 and then has team options for 2020 and 2021 at really cheap money, $17.5 million, $18 million. I mean, can the Mets pull that off?
I don't care. I hope they do because it gets them out of the American League. So, again, Terry, you and I have talked about this. Chris already said it tonight. Every one of these hypotheticals begins and ends with, for me, what's the effect on the Boston Red Sox? Okay, get him out of the American League. Bye. Like, go be nasty somewhere else. The money is realistic, and with 2 years of, three years of term left. So he has a 3-year, $54 million deal. I mean, Jesus, if they're offering him and we have the assets, I'd go trade for him if I'm the Red Sox. But, you know, if it's out of the American League, I'm okay with it. I'm a little bit like, Why does Cleveland want to even do this? Like, he's so good. He's a 2-time top 3 Cy Young finisher. Like, it just doesn't make any sense on realistic money. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an excellent point because, I mean, look at who the Indians have already lost. They've lost, let's see, Lonnie Chisenhall. Yep. Brantley, Cody Allen, Yan Gomes, and did I say Cody Andrew Allen?
Miller probably won't be back.
Right,
he won't be back.
So they've lost all of those guys, and now they want to trade away Kluber. I was also thinking as well. I mean, what's it going to take to win the AL Central? I mean, 84, 85 games might get it done.
Well, I think that's why if you look at the Indians, they see that they have at least another year to be able to not have, you know, they don't need to have the best team in terms of the division because Kansas City's rebuilding, Detroit's rebuilding, Minnesota, who the heck knows what they're going to, I mean, they just fired their manager and just brought in a new one in Rocco Baldelli, so we don't know what's going to happen with them. And the White Sox, albeit, you know, are they going to take that next step? And they've been rumored to go after guys like Machado and even Harper to a certain degree. So if you're the Indians, you feel like, okay, if we trade either Carrasco or Bauer or Kluber, if we trade one of them and try to, you know, to at least to a lesser degree, get back major league talent that can help us win now and for the next couple years, it's worth trading because when you have a small – or rather, when you're a small market team like Cleveland, you kind of have to look at these moves because I'm telling you right now, they're not going to keep Lindor. Ramirez, albeit under an affordable contract, they're not going to keep him when his contract is up. So, you know, it comes to a point where I get, you know, trading away a guy like Kluber hurts or Carrasco or Bauer. But you have to do it if you're the Cleveland Indians because it's hard to – I mean, they're not the Red Sox. They're not the Yankees. They're not the Dodgers. They just can't keep going after it year after year after year. The prospects they gave up to get guys like Andrew Miller and, you know, even guys like Brad Hand to a certain degree, they gave up talent from their system, and it's hard to get that back, and it takes them a couple years to go through the draft to get that. So if they trade Kluber to, let's say, the Mets and get a Peter Alonso – a Steven Matz to a certain, you know, degree, I would do that if they can get a little bit more because then Matz goes to their rotation. Peter Alonso, who's a first base prospect, went to Florida. He can play first base and has a lot of power, good approach at the plate, and that gives them something to have for the next 4-5-plus years.
Yeah, it's painful, but the diehard Cleveland fans have to hate it, though.
Yeah. They have to, but here's an idea. Go to the games and help your team, because there were times that they were winning and still winning. Actually, I shouldn't say they were. They're still winning, but nobody goes to the games. So they want to complain about their stars leaving. Well, here's an idea. Go watch them so they can keep those players, because Cleveland has shown when they made it to the World Series and they lost to the Cubs, they used that revenue that they got from the World Series and they signed the bird, Edwin Encarnacion. So to say that they don't use their money, I would say no, they do. But Cleveland doesn't want to help them at least a little bit more. But I'm not in Cleveland, so I can't speak fully.
They're trying to avoid the purgatory that the Orioles and the Marlins and now the Mariners are going through. But it's just such a tightrope to have to walk and hope that it all comes out right. Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
I don't know that I have too many more thoughts. Cleveland, they have an elite manager. They have some pieces that have kind of gone off by the wayside. They went from being, what was it, an inning away from winning a World Series to really not being in the upper echelon anymore. The Astros are not going anywhere. The Red Sox are not going anywhere. The Yankees are not going anywhere. Chris highlighted that they're in the easiest division in Major League Baseball, so they're probably going to be there. But it's one of those things where just is being there enough, or can you admit to yourself that you're not elite enough to win an actual championship? So, and if you're going to say to yourself that you can't, then go take the steps to rebuild now rather than shoot two empty shots over the next 2 years and now you have to completely empty the cupboard and you have to rebuild anyways, but you wait 2 years even though you know you don't have a chance to win a World Series. So I mean, a lot of that's probably the analysis going on in Cleveland, and I understand it. I understand it. You're still good enough that if you get hot and you got an elite manager and you have an elite player like Kluber and some other pieces, it just seems to me you're blowing it up a year too early. But that's my thought. Maybe they think they don't have any chance at Miller. I mean, Chris, maybe you could chime in on that, because I haven't really heard too much of the market on Miller. I assume just like a third of the league's in because he's that good, but If they realistically think that they can get him, and even if they can maybe save a little bit of money because he likes Cleveland, I don't know the answer to that. It just seems like it's a year early to blow it up, but that's me.
The market for Miller right now is the Braves and the Phillies. I haven't seen a lot of other teams really rumored. It's mainly been those two teams, and periodically enough, it's been from the NL East, but I think Cleveland, when they acquired Brad Hand and gave up their best prospect in terms of position-wise and Francisco Mejia to the Padres, they did that move because they felt like, okay, we're going to lose Cody Allen and Andrew Miller, but more than likely we can put Brad Hand in that position, in that closer's role, and still feel like we can compete. And I get your point, blowing it up a year early. It's probably maybe not the smart thing, at least while you have a contending team right now. But again, I'm going to go back to your point with, the Patriots. And I'm a Cowboys fan. I love what you guys do back in Massachusetts. You always trade guys or get rid of them a year early rather than a year late. And I'm not saying for people who are listening that are Cleveland fans that Kluber is going to all of a sudden become this terrible pitcher that's going to have to retire because he can't throw a baseball. I'm not saying that. But if you have a chance to get talent, you're better off doing that now while he's at his peak, because you got to remember, Kluber over the last four, maybe 5 years, has thrown 200-plus innings. He has a lot of miles under that arm. And the last 2 years, specifically in the postseason, he has shown that when he gets to the postseason, he wears down and he's basically a dead duck because his arm is just so many innings. And, you get to that point where when does that affect the arm speed and the breaking ball? How many more times can you be in that top echelon of the Cy Young? And Kluber has been that. But if you're Cleveland, sell high now before the stock drops. Because once the stock drops, especially in baseball, because we're talking about human people and not stocks in New York, they don't go back up. They typically just continue on going down.
All right, 3 points, starting with your last point. I agree. But on the money that he's on, it just – you have to factor that in. Two, at this point, I think you're using minor league names, and you could be making them up, and I wouldn't know because I've just never heard of these people.
I'm not making them up. No.
I'm writing a list. I'll Google later, and I'll send you a scathing email if I feel like you're lying to our listeners. I mean, look, I'm impressed, and I mean, obviously, I need to take the next step to start to learn some of these organizations a little bit deeper now that I'm doing the podcast, because I feel like I know Major League Baseball really, really well. But you're crazy, man. You got some information, so you're a great asset to our podcast, and thanks for coming on again. And the third point I now forget. But your analogy to the Patriots is not wrong. Except it's not football, it's baseball. And Kluber's contract just makes a shit ton of sense. And so, honestly, if they're dangling him for, like, a major league player and two assets, I really hope the Red Sox are in on him.
Well, he should come – even at – he'll be 33 years old just after the season starts. But with 3 years remaining at that cheap of money, he should command close to a Chris Sale-level deal. And – 4 out of the last 5 years, he's finished top 3 in the Cy Young voting. Two of those years were first place finishes. So he's just one of those guys who's pitching very well into his now mid 30s almost. And I mean, unless they want to trade Lindor, I mean, that's the only other guy who could net somewhat of a haul. And they have had discussions with the Dodgers, and I guess the rumored trade package was, number one, Yasiel Puig, who always seems to be in a trade package. They just can't get rid of that guy. Number two was Alex Wood, who, you know, is on a good year. He's probably a number two or number three. And then Chris would probably be a little more familiar with Yadier Alvarez. I think he's a catcher in the minor leagues, but that was the package that was discussed and so far has not been agreed upon.
You said from the Dodgers, right?
From the Dodgers.
Terry, I take offense to the fact that you think that I wouldn't know who Yadier Martinez is.
Well, it's, I don't even...
On the same conversation, I have no idea who that guy is. I remember my third point. Kluber's mechanics are really technically sound. He doesn't throw like Sale's plant leg is basically in the Boston Red Sox on deck circle, and then he has to whip across to get the ball to home plate. That creates a tremendous amount of stress on a whole bunch of different points on his body, most of which his shoulder, which obviously is coming to fruition with the last two seasons of injury issues. Kluber is like, if the benchmark is Maddox, right? Because Maddox was like so freaking sound, it was kind of annoying. Like he finished like he was all of a sudden a shortstop. That's not, and Kluber's not like that technically sound, but he's really, really good. And I just feel like guys like that typically are better later in their career. And then he has two elite things that I think will also factor. Number one, balls. He's tough as nails. He just doesn't give a fuck. I love guys like that, by the way. I'm a huge Kluber fan if you haven't picked up on that yet. And then the other thing that's a huge factor is elite location. And so he can lose a little bit, but when you're locating like he can, just like Maddox and Glavin, who both pitched in almost I think both guys pitched in their year 40 year, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong. Terry's about to throw stats at me. I that's the way I look at Kluber, and I could be wrong. I mean, I'm wrong all the time, so what the hell. But to me, that's the way I look at Kluber.
Chris, final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I stated before, Cleveland's in that sticky situation where do we sell off one guy and try to, you know, I'm going to steal what Jerry DePoto said. We're not retooling, we're reimagining. Well, the Mariners are retooling, they're rebuilding. They're tearing it down completely. So I don't see Cleveland doing that right off the bat, but I hate to say this, you know, if Cleveland realistically is not going to sign Lindor and they feel like that they have a chance to win this year and then this year's the final year with contracts and salary and everything else, I mean, why wait and just lose Lindor and get back very little in terms of, you know, picks and money because of the new collective bargaining agreement, depending on who signs him, because of the team who signs him, the luxury tax goes over, yada, yada, and everything. But why not just trade him while he has at least 2 years of service left on his contract and get back a haul rather than trading him with a year left and almost running into the situation of the Paul Goldschmidt with the D-backs, where they could very well trade him, but they're not going to get back the value that they should because teams now view that 1 year left on the deal being that like biggest problem, more so than even what they've done on the field.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. You know, why half-ass it? It's so hard to replace. You would need two above-average players to adequately replace what Lindor can do by himself, and you know, that's not an easy thing. So I would absolutely you know, dangle him out there at the very least. Do you think he could possibly have better value maybe in July more so than he might right now?
He could. It just all depends on, you know, what teams are looking for at the deadline. I mean, relievers more so than starting pitchers are going to be the biggest wants because we're getting to that age where starting pitching is starting to become less of a thing, and now it's, okay, how fast can I get to the bullpen? How quickly can I go to my opener, or how quickly can I go to my second guy, my third guy? You know, I mean, you're not going to see the opener in terms of Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, and others, but when it comes to the third, fourth, and even some fifth starters to a certain degree, you might not see the starters last that long. So, you know, if a team's looking for a shortstop that can – you know, Lindor's the top echelon. I mean, I saw a discussion during the season about who's better. Is it Lindor? Is it Correa? They put Machado in there, which I didn't understand because he's not a shortstop. He's a third baseman. But I pick Correa over Lindor, but it's not like Lindor is that far behind by any means. So any team that has a chance to get him for at least 2.5 years, you would have to think the value for him has to be somewhere in the line of a top 1, 2, and 3 best prospects in your system, plus more, because of what he means to your team and what he could do for the next 2.5 years.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Cleveland does, you know, throughout the start of the year. If maybe the Twins kind of catch fire early and build up a lead, it'll be interesting to see how much more Cleveland is willing to sell off. You mentioned Goldschmidt, so we can just kind of make that the last segment here. He's, you know, got 1 year left, and he's coming into his age 31 season. So, he'll kind of be, you know, barring health issues, and I don't see why he would have any. You know, he'll be at about the Donaldson phase of his career when he does hit free agency. But here's some mock trades that I found on Sports Illustrated. So, Chris, just tell me if these are any good or not. A guy named Ben Reeder, I'm going to guess is how he pronounces it.
Ben Reeder.
Okay. So. he knows obscure sports writers too.
Show off.
he's in Baseball America. I read his writings all the time. I was just reading them today.
Well, I have a feeling you might like his trade then. His mock deal is with the Astros, and for the Astros to get Goldschmidt, they're going to have to give up J.P. Buskauskas. I don't know.
Dukakis from Carolina.
Okay. Carolina. And so he's the first player in there. Dean Dietz is the second one, and Garrett Stubbs is the third one. Is that a haul for Goldschmidt?
No, not even close, because J.B. Bukakis is at best a reliever. The other two are the second and third tier of the Astros prospects. They're not even getting – the D-backs are not even getting the best guys out of them because, again, Paul Goldschmidt's in his last year of his deal. They're not going to get back equal value. If I'm the Astros, I'm pulling the trigger on that 150 times and then 300 on weekends, because what he can be in that middle of the lineup, even I get Goldschmidt struggled for the first half of the year. He came off in the second and really kind of lived up to his numbers. But you put him in that lineup with what they have from 1 through 7, maybe 1 through 8, depending on who's pitching that day, he helps that lineup immensely. And if you're the D-backs, you kind of have to look at, okay, what can we get? What's the max value? And realistically, Bukakis is the lower-level guy on the Astros depth chart in terms of prospect value because they're pretty deep. But if you put him in the D-backs, he ends up being – I mean, I'm not the prospect whiz, so I can't tell you exactly where he would end up. But with all the guys they gave up at the deadline to try to keep their momentum going last year, albeit they didn't make the playoffs – he would jump up, I would say, somewhere between, I would say between 9 to 5, maybe even higher, because he's almost major league ready now. He could come up and be your reliever starting next week because he's got that fastball slider combination.
All right, and here's the second of the four. This one, Emma Bacellieri, I'm going to guess, is how she pronounces that. Sports Illustrated, hires some complicated names. Yeah, well, she her deal comes from the Cardinals, and that's a team he's been connected with. A catcher, Andrew Knizer, I don't know.
He's a stud guy? No, single A.
Oh, single A guy. Oh, okay. And Connor, I can't even read my
how
own
could
writing.
You, how, hold on, Terry. Hold on.
Yes.
How the fuck could you possibly know that?
Because I just. I mean,
this is. I'm going to send you. I'm going to text you my email. I want you to start sending me these links because I got some homework to do.
He's Rain Man. This is unbelievable. You're talking to Rain Man.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like, you know. Jesus.
Connor Capel, is that it? I can't read my writing. He's an outfield prospect. So those are the only two players that she thinks Goldschmidt is worth out of the Cardinals system. I'm guessing that's not overwhelming.
No, you said, what was the other last name? You said Connor who?
Capel? I don't know. Can't even read my own writing.
I could be wrong here, but That player's not even in their top 30 from what I read last week. So now the other player you mentioned, now what was his name again? I wrote down the last name. What was his first name?
Andrew.
Yeah, he's in the top 10. He's their number 5 prospect. So I could see why she put the second player as someone not even in their top 30. So, and I mean, that would make sense. That's a little bit higher than what the Astros are giving up. But
okay, and they do have a need for a catcher, for sure.
They do. Yeah. They do, which is why you would ask for the catching prospect, and he's number 5 in their system.
Yeah, all right. And here's the third deal, John Taylor, easy one. Also,
What team is this with?
This also comes out of the Cardinals. He's offering up first base and outfield prospect Jose Martinez, and then right-handed pitcher Dakota Hudson.
Well, Martinez is a major league guy right now. He plays first base for the Cardinals. Dakota Hudson came up I think it was, what, three-fourths through the season, along with Ponce de Leon, Flattery, and others. I mean, that's a deal unlike the other two where it's basically major league for major league. Like, you're getting major league talent now. And Dakota Hudson could pitch in their rotation as soon as they acquire him. So that's a deal where it kind of makes sense. But then the D-backs are saying, are we – you know, we're rebuilding, but then we're also going for it at the same time, where the other two deals were, we're going to retool, but we're going to compete maybe next year or the year after.
Okay.
So that's kind of what that deal is talking about.
And they have a pitcher named Martinez, though, don't they? Is it Carlos Martinez?
Correct.
The Cardinals,
yeah. Carlos Martinez.
Yeah.
Correct.
I got him mixed up. All right, and then the last deal comes from Gabriel Baumgartner, which on paper does not look a lot like Bumgarner. It sounds similar. And his deal comes from the Yankees. And
whoa.
Yeah, here we go. I don't think this is going to be a good one, but he's offering up Greg Bird, who will probably spend two-thirds of the year on the DL, and Estevion Floreal, who's an outfield prospect, I guess, with you guys?
Not doing it.
So he's good.
It's not even that Floreal is good. I mean, he's a 5-tool player, and he has the highest ceiling of any prospect I've read in the Yankee system in terms of position player, at least in the last 5 to 6 years. But it's more so that, again, it's a one-year rental. I would not sign Goldschmidt long-term because he's over the age of 30 now. Why give up your best prospect position-wise and Greg Bird, who, albeit injury-prone, but you just never know, this could be the year that he's going to be healthy for a one-year rental. I would not do that deal at all if I'm the Yankees, and I don't think they're going to do it. I'm surprised that person wrote that.
Okay.
No disrespect. No disrespect to Baumgartner, but I think that person wrote that to get some likes or retweets or whatever, because that doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Well, I'd like to think I know some of you guys as prospects, but Floreal was not on my radar, so now I know.
I'm waiting for Chris to start throwing in fun facts, like the Devil Rays 73rd prospect overcame a reading disability in third grade to, you know, like the information is unbelievable. Like, it really is. Like, you know, I clearly need to start doing some homework. My input here, if anything, is the Diamondbacks are another problem franchise to me.
Like,
just spend some fucking money. God damn it. Like, it just ruins baseball. And in the American League, when the run was over in, like, what, mid-August, you knew what who the teams were going to be. And there was some, like, you know, where was it going to slot in? Who was going to be the second wild card team? And there was less of that in the National League. The National League was actually quite riveting. So it goes against my point. So I'm using the American League. I just hate teams like the Devil Rays, like the Marlins, like these teams that just don't hold ground when they have talent and allow themselves to just go back into mediocrity. When if you spend some dollar bills, like you know, and I don't know exactly what the negotiations were 2 years ago when they could have bought out Goldschmidt's arbitration years. But this is just, you know, a small to mid-market team feeding the next major market team. And it just makes, you know, again, Chris used football earlier. I know Terry is not a big fan of football analogies. But, like, every single year there's teams that you don't expect in it in the NFL.
Yep.
And there's so much more parity, I think, is the key word. There's no fucking parity in Major League Baseball. And it really – and I'm fortunate because I'm born and raised a Red Sox fan, so I'm not struggling with it. Like, my team's in the mix every year, and if we have a bad year, we're back the next year. But, like, these – like, if I'm an Arizona Diamondbacks fan, this is so goddamn frustrating that you're just dangling him just to get rid of him because he's in the last year of his deal and you know you're not going to try to sign him. There's talent on that squad. Like, they're actually like a player or two away from really being competitive. And instead of going and getting that player, we're talking about dealing Paul Goldschmidt. It's there's something wrong with baseball, and it's for a different podcast about how to fix it. But like, this team should be going and adding a player, not getting rid of a guy like Paul Goldschmidt.
And I love the words you use, parity. And I've said this for quite a while, that there's the premier teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Astros, the Dodgers, and maybe occasionally one or two others depending on the year. But then you have the bottom dwellers of the teams that know they're not going to win it. So instead of going for it and then costing themselves maybe even longer droughts, they figure, you know what, we'll tank for 5 years, put out bad products, and then when we're good in year 4 and 5, that's when, okay, it's like, oh, you know what, we can do it. I think what hurt – I don't want to say it hurt Major League Baseball, but I think because of sports being a copycat league, people saw what Houston did in terms of – you know, I'm currently reading Astro Ball right now about how Houston went from being one of the worst teams ever to now being one of the best teams, at least on paper, that there has been during my time on this, you know, in this earth. And I think what hurt the game in that sense, because I'm going to use that word kindly, hurt, is that it succeeded for them, that they were so bad, and now people are copying them. The Cubs did it. And now you're seeing other teams as well. The Reds, the Brewers did it up until the last year, year and a half. So it would not shock me, because the collective bargaining agreement, I think, is over. I don't quote me on this, but I think it's 2022 or 2023. Don't be surprised if you see something where you're going to see maybe a little wrinkle of, okay, if you're going to tank, you're going to get this sort of penalty or knock against you, because – you know, the ratings are not great with baseball right now. People are not going to the games, and you can't have this, you know, same 5, 6, 7 teams every year, because eventually we're talking about the NBA. And no offense, I can't stand the NBA, right? Well, I can now, because now there's different teams, at least right now, who are being better than others. But, you know, Major League Baseball, there should be a lot more parity because of the amount of games and just the overall wear and tear of the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is a topic for a different podcast, but just to lead into that potential future podcast, you want to penalize the teams that are willing to spend money. And I get that, because if you don't, the really top-end teams will just go hog wild, and you're going to get what you got in the 90s and early 2000s. There has to be a penalty for being just a shitbag organization. So, you know, again, topic for another podcast, but I'm sorry, but if you're back-to-back-to-back last place, you don't get a first-round draft pick. Like, go spend some fucking money and put yourself in a position to win some goddamn ball games and make the sport better and bring the shitty teams back to the middle. I'm not even saying be elite. Just bring them back to the middle a little bit so that this sort of stuff with Paul Goldschmidt doesn't happen. Because I'm telling you right now, if there was a penalty in place for what the Diamondbacks are about to be for the next 5 years, they'd be talking about signing Paul Goldschmidt. They wouldn't just be talking about what they're going to do, which is trade him by the deadline. So, it pisses me off. And maybe if I was a Devil Rays fan, like another co-host for the program, you know, I would be talking differently, and I'd be frustrated, and they try and they do their best, but they just don't have the, you know, but there's revenue sharing. Like, the money's there. It just seems like a cop out, and I just can't stand that the bottom third of the league just allows it to be what it is, which is a money grab revenue thing where they're running the supermarket. They're running a goddamn supermarket. They don't give a shit about the product. They don't give a shit about winning. And this is a perfect example of that.
You know, I think I don't want to put the Diamondbacks quite in the same group as Tampa. I mean, they did spend 230 something million on Zach Greinke, and Hazen got hired there at the start of last year, and, you know, wheeled and dealed pretty good. You know, he brought in Steven Souza and traded for Brad Boxberger, and, you know, both those players had issues with health as well as mechanics. But and then taken also into the fact that they're going to be moving into a new stadium in 2022 that's a little better situated within the Phoenix area. I think that's going to be, you know, no worse than a mid-market team, and possibly, you know, if the fan base responds, that, you know, it could potentially be a big market team at some point. So, you know, Hazen came in, you know, at a weird time, similar to how DePoto came in with the Mariners, and you know, so they have to kind of clean up some of the previous, you know, regime's mess, and you know, we'll see. But, you know, just to super briefly touch on your small market thing and how teams tank, you know, I see both sides of it. You know, it shouldn't be purpose. You shouldn't have a team with an overall $15 to $20 million payroll. I mean, that's pretty bad. But at the end of the day, also, you're still going to have your 60 and 70 win teams. I mean, that's just how the math is going to shake out. And, you know,
it doesn't have to be the same team. I mean, and by the way, my thought here is not some novel thought. Like, I'm, you know, European soccer leagues relegate teams into different leagues.
That's a great point.
So, and I mean, North American sports are never going to allow that because of the elite dollar bills available to the major four sports leagues, and then franchises within each league. So we're not talking about relegation, but I mean, it's not some novel idea. And you could imagine, if you're about to be relegated into, let's say, the AAA of European soccer, you're let's say, and I don't know how many, you know, using baseball numbers, let's say you're 60 and 92, right, and you got 20 games left or whatever it is, you're gonna try to win those fucking games. I mean, you're doing everything you can to stay where you are. You're doing everything you can to bump up a league, or stay within that league, or using a baseball reference, stay out of last place and bump that next team. And so what happens is, you're playing, but now you're playing the Red Sox, you're playing the Astros, and it's September 12th, and you need to win. You know, you need to go 500 just to stay out of some sort of penalty. Those games are going to be more competitive. You're not going to be focused on. And another thing I hate, by the way, and again, a topic for another podcast, I hate the September call-ups and like 74,000 people on your bench. Because like the Orioles are going to throw, they're going to try to see what they have. And they don't care about winning the games. At that point, they're going to lose 115 games. They don't give a shit. So they're just out there trying to see what they have. Well, that's a problem. It's not a good thing. That's a problem. And you got to create something, some cheese or in front of the mouse, or some rabbit in front of the, you know, the dog, or whatever it is. But you need to create goals for teams that otherwise aren't trying to still win a championship because of their position in the particular season.
I'm not a fan of the September call-ups either, but, and I think it you know, it takes away from the integrity of, you know, of a tight playoff race as well. So where's, just to kind of wrap this all up, where does Goldschmidt go? I'm saying the Astros.
I hope he stays in Arizona and they expend dollars in other areas and try to keep what they have. I mean, Corbin obviously is going to price himself out of Arizona, and I get that. I'd like to see him stay in Arizona. I'd like another team to be competitive, because he leaves and his production leaves. I mean, he's really a six-time All-Star, 3 Gold Gloves, 4 Silver Sluggers. I mean, he's an elite player, and he's gone under the radar because he's in Arizona. But, like, stay in Arizona and keep one more team competitive, because that's what's best for baseball. So that's what I'm probably wrong. I'm wrong, but
he's not staying. I mean, if he was younger, I think they may take a longer look at investing in him. But
I don't want him to go to the Yankees, because I mean, unless it means they're not going to have a fifth starter. Because if he goes to the Yankees, that lineup is so robust. It's so well-rounded. It's so deep. And I'm not even talking about the first nine guys. Right. But if they go get him at first base and they add somebody like Keuchel and Corbin and they've already added Paxton, I mean, I think that at that point you just have to start thinking that maybe the Yankees have jumped ahead of the Red Sox.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
I think he's going to go to Houston. I think if he goes to New York, yeah, does it help their power? Yeah, I mean, you add anybody of that ilk, it's going to help with them, you know, power-wise, home runs, et cetera. You would think that his home runs might spike because he's hitting in a ballpark that's 200 feet left and right. I mean, I could throw the ball over from home plate. It's not that hard. But realistically, you look at their lineup would be so right-handed. You know, it just comes to the point where you need to get a couple lefties in there to kind of split it out. But I think their focus more so is going to be on, you know, like you've mentioned, going after pitching. And, you know, a side note about Patrick Corbin, and I learned about this a couple days ago. Did you know in 2016, when the D-backs made the playoffs, Corbin did not pitch in the playoffs? Did you know that? In 2016?
I did not.
I think I did.
He didn't pitch.
Well, I mean, Greinke, Robbie Ray, yeah, who was basically their ace anyway.
Yeah, and then Godley.
Godley, right. And then they got swept. Yeah, absolutely.
Or they lost three, sorry. So, yeah, Corbin didn't even pitch. And albeit I know, you know, it was when he was still coming back from Tommy John and he wasn't at his full strength. But, you know, and he's better now than he was in 16. But, you know, I've heard people throw that argument out there that, you know, he didn't even pitch on that postseason roster during that time. So that's just a little side note I'd like to give out to the people who are listening.
Yeah, I think that's Sonny Gray all over again. Unfortunately, I could be wrong, but you know
we won't know unless he puts on the pinstripes and steps on the mound. We won't know.
He can rack up the strikeouts, that's for sure. But we'll see.
He's a lefty who can throw hard and has a good slider that typically can bold well, compared to maybe righties who don't bold well as much in the AL East. But then again, you know, it's a crapshoot. I mean, the only guys I could say whoever, if they were to come to New York, the only ones I think would be able to bold well in that environment, I can count on one hand. And that's two lefties, Sale and Bumgarner. I can't think of anyone else right now who could pitch well that I know presently right now without feeling like there'd be some doubt. Those two are the only ones.
Not David Price.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding. Come on. I had to get my David Price singer in. Jeez. All right.
Well, he does hold all the cards now.
He does. He does. So, Chris, you ought to kick the tires on him.
No.
Well, all right. I guess we'll wrap it up on that. It was a weird show. Sorry for everyone who stuck through it. Hopefully, I will just tell everyone right now, I am upgrading my Wi-Fi tomorrow, and I just got to go pick the modem up, actually. So that will hopefully solve everything. But we'll know for sure, I guess, on Wednesday or Thursday. But Chris, thanks again for coming on. We didn't even go over your stuff. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram, @Smoke_Saunders. They could also follow me on YouTube or subscribe to me. That's where all my play-by-play is for all the high school and collegiate games I do in Connecticut, as well as summer baseball for the Bristol Blues. And you can also follow me on Facebook, Christopher Saunders.
Very good. Well, all right, guys. Have a good night, and we'll see what the rest of the week brings.
Looking forward to it.
Good night, guys. Nice talking with you, Chris.
You too. Have a good one.
Again, I apologize for that 2 or 3 minutes of chaos there. I hope that never happens again. It's only ever happened one other time in 105 episodes or so. So I think the odds are with us. But have a good start to your week, and we'll see you in a few days. Take care.
It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to power of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the days when there's a West Coast swing. Married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything. Still paying Red Sox debts from long ago. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.